Start the real lecture. Today is Monday, 25th of January. I have received several emails that very many of the participants can't attend this lecture since they have some other very important courses going on and there are no option for video presentation. So I try to be very, very practical and give instructions how to go on with the course. I have been very happy to see that you have, most of you have submitted the group work part number one. You have selected some interesting chemical, what is quite often problem in the in Finland, and you have collected the physical and chemical properties and toxicological properties and guideline values, and that's very good starting point. And tomorrow we will go through the next step, so where you can find a nice case contaminated by your chemicals. So I think perhaps some of you will have already checked this ELY-keskus, ELY Center list of permissions or announcement and try to find some nice place. But before that, I hope we have time to run through the this is remediation technologies. Can you see now my presentation, PowerPoint presentation?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, because we have to go still through the biological and other more exotic methods for the soil remediation. And even though biological remediation hasn't been my favorite technology, and I have been working with these chemical oxidations and in situ technologies, you can't ignore the biological processes going on in the environment, because this is something what is going on all the time in the cycle of hydrogen compounds, phosphorus, sulfur, phosphorus, and the whole life is based on this degradation of organic material and consumption of this organic matter as a food and source of energy, and release of carbon dioxide, capture of energy from the chemical bonds, and then production of new bacteria or plant or so on. The problem of the hazardous chemicals is that for some reason they are not suitable for this cycle, and for some reasons this carbon cycle is not possible, and we need to consider something else. But in very many cases, our problem of the soil contamination can be solved with the biological method, that there are bacteria in the environment naturally which are able to use our contaminant. And that is going on constantly, and even there is a one technology what is called intrinsic remediation or natural attenuation, and they are considered as a soil treatment technology, even though it's mostly monitoring of what is going on. But why microbiology doesn't suit for the cycle and degradation of the compounds what we have been discussing? Most of the compounds they are substrate for some other organisms, and the first step of the degradation can be fungi, followed by different kind of worms, for example, and then comes this heterogenic bacteria. Heterogenic bacteria means that they need carbon source, external carbon source for the production of new bacteria and energy. The process can be also based on the and some enzymes excreted by this bacteria. If the conditions, for example, are too toxic for the bacteria, then the enzymes produced by, for example, bacterial culture in the reactor takes place, and just the enzymes are collected, and the enzymes are injected to the soil in order to do the business. It has been studied and it has been practiced somewhere in the world, but in real life, this technology it's very expensive, and the production of enzymes is very expensive, and a lot of enzymes are needed in order to degrade our problem further to some other molecule degradation products and carbon dioxide. And the problem behind this non-biodegradability is that our compound is recalcitrant. And for example, when I have been producing scientific articles and so on, it's usually pre-treatment of recalcitrant compounds to more biodegradable, not to degrade the hazardous compounds to carbon dioxide and water, but to some compound which is not toxic to this system, or the molecule is not anymore refractory. What happens to the molecule is that, for example, the leaching of the chlorine ion from the molecule is enough to make this molecule more biodegradable. There are very few bacteria which are able to degrade compounds that contains halogen ions, usually chlorine, because within this evolution of life, there has been a plenty of time for the development of bacteria which are able to degrade very recalcitrant stuff like lignin and so on. But these bonds with the molecules and halogens, they are introduced more or less after the Second World War, and that's why all the compounds containing chlorine a problem, a big problem for bacteria. Then we also have compounds which have a very, very low solubility. They are hydrophobic and they want to be attached on the surface of organic matter or inorganic matter. And this material is not available by the bacteria. The bacteria can't get the molecule out of the matrix. It can be on the surface of the matrix, or then if the contaminant has been on the soil for years and years and years, the molecule might enter to this process of humidification in the soil matrix, and somehow these molecules are inside of the humic matter, and with normal techniques and normal bacteria, they are not able to reach this toxic compound in the soil matrix. And for example, what we have been doing is using this pretreatment oxidation in order to break the hydrophobic molecule into a smaller molecule with functional groups like carboxylic or phenolic groups, and then bacteria can absorb and start to use that compound. Or this oxidation, chemical oxidation, is breaking the structure of the matrix, this humic matter, and these compounds, chlorophenols, for example, they are released from the soil, and after that, bacteria can start to do this degradation. But meanwhile, also when these halogenated organic compounds are released from the matrix, that can also increase the toxicity of those compounds. When they were wrapped inside the humic matter, they were also harmless. But now, when this molecule is in the water soluble form, it turns back to toxic to the organisms and bacteria. Some compounds, hazardous compounds, can be toxic to the bacteria, or they can cause inhibition. And when we do the lab work, I think as a last experiment in the course, we are measuring the toxicity of 3,5-dichlorophenol to the activated sludge coming from the wastewater treatment plant. And we will measure the toxicity, the oxygen consumption rate inhibition. And that is a standard toxicity test. And shows very clearly what happens when the bacteria are exposed to too high concentration of toxic compounds. They can resist some concentration, but after some concentration, there is some failures in the physiology of the bacteria, and they stop to breathe, and they can consider it as a dead bacteria. And what can happen, as I told you, low concentration of hazardous material, hazardous compounds might not be a problem. And if you increase the concentration of toxic compounds little by little, it might happen that among the normal microbiological community, there are one bacteria group which are able to resist and even to degrade the compound X. And that leads to the exponential growth of that kind of bacteria. So 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, and so on and so on. And after some time, after this adaptation time, and this incubation time, there's enough bacteria, the proper kind of bacteria, which are able to utilize this hazardous compound X as a food, a source of carbon and energy. And but if you try to introduce some hazardous compounds quickly, immediately to non-adapted bacteria or bioreactor, the reactor will collapse. And it might take quite a long time before it recovers. But if you introduce it little by little, there is no that kind of a total collapse of the reactor or process. Another possibility is that this compound X, it is not actually food or source of energy and carbon, but it is co-metabolized. So the enzymes around in this reactor are able to degrade those hazardous compounds, among the other less problematic compounds. And that's called co-metabolism. And this is, as I told, this is the my core competence and research area, chemical oxidation combined with biodegradation. And as I told, chemical oxidation is unsensitive for these toxic compounds. It will degrade, oxidize or reduce compounds. But the problem is that since it's not selective, the consumption of this oxidant or reducing agent is huge, because there are always most of the time there is a natural matrix, like natural organic matter in the soil, humic matter in the soil, and all those compounds are consuming these chemical oxidants. Addition of oxidants like ozone or hydrogen peroxide, they have also this kind of secondary benefits. While ozone or hydrogen peroxide degrade, they produce oxygen to supply the aerobic degradation in the soil. With it, otherwise, a big problem that if there is a lot of consumption of organic matter, oxygen is running out in the soil, and the degradation will stop. But there are this kind of technologies to introduce air or oxygen or compounds which release oxygen in soil. And ozone and hydrogen peroxides are one of the most common compounds. I will also introduce later on some very recent products which can also be used to maintain the aerobic conditions in the soil or reactor and make this aerobic degradation possible. And also when you introduce hydrogen peroxide or ozone or oxygen releasing compounds, there are exothermic processes and the temperature will increase. And that property needs to be used very carefully because too high doses of ozone or hydrogen peroxide into the soil, for example, can cause explosions. So too fast release of oxygen and heat. First, formation of steam. That is quite common and also have occurred in Finland, for example, in Mikkeli, when they injected hydrogen peroxide to the soil. So there were steam formation, which is actually not so dangerous itself, but if it's a little bit more bigger scale, then there is the hazard of real explosion and fire. And also like a rule of the thumb that concentration of hydrogen peroxide can never be higher than 11% when it's injected to the soil. Otherwise, you will get this kind of two exothermic processes. But after you have done this kind of treatment, chemical treatment, I think this is either based on the ozonation experiment or Fenton treatment, and this is from our own data and from our own experiment, and this shows that if you don't treat the soil, there's no bacterial processes going on, no consumption of oxygen. But if you do this pretreatment, the biodegradability of this matrix, the soil matrix in sea, increase. I don't know if you are familiar with this BOD test. It's a bottle test where you put some material and seed of bacteria and start to follow under standard conditions, meaning in room temperature, and if something degradation is going on, carbon dioxide is produced and there is a manometric measurement of the pressure and increase of carbon dioxide, which is turned to value of BOD. So, and when I was telling that there is so one possibility to make this master thesis, this is the one of those tools what we would like to try to use in order to simulate the effect of the Fenton reaction to the soil coming from the Nuuskakuja. The soil contaminated by hydrocarbons. And when this kind of strong oxidant, ozone molecule, chlorine, or then this hydroxyl radical or organic radical is reacting with this parent compound, there will be this kind of rupture of, for example, this very recalcitrant aromatic rings. And aromatic ring turns to carboxylic acid and phenol functional group. And both of them are some material which are very suitable for the food of microorganisms, bacteria. And this initial polyaromatic hydrocarbons, this is not the most recalcitrant one, the phenanthrene, but that this kind of treatment also, besides of the decrease of the toxicity, it's also increased the solubility of these polyaromatic hydrocarbons, which otherwise are stacked on the matrix. So, the idea of the biological treatment is to use the very same processes that occurs in the environment. And biotechnology means that we try to use all kind of methods to keep these bacteria happy and maintain the conditions favorable for biodegradation. And one of the most important thing is to guarantee the mass transfer of the material, that when they have this bacterial population and food and electron acceptors, we have to mix them that they are contact in each other. And one of most important is this to produce and introduce this electron acceptor in catabolic reaction for the degradation to provide for the purposes of respiration. And in anaerobic processes, it is oxygen and or oxygen produced by some other means, from degradation of ozone or degradation of hydrogen peroxide or from oxygen-releasing compounds. So at least the concentration of oxygen is 2 milligrams per liter. But in the anaerobic conditions, the electron acceptor can be nitrate, sulfate, or carbon dioxide. And this degradation is more or less like used when we consider dehalogenation reactions, so the release of the rupture of the molecule and this halogen bond. Also the In most cases, some moisture are needed. And if you have a reactor, it means that you have to add water, or if you have heap of compost, you have to provide also water, oxygen, and sometimes also phosphorus and nitrogen or some other minerals in order to enhance the biological degradability and the growth of the bacteria. And whenever this bioreactor reaction takes place, either in the reactor or in the some kind of aerated lagoon, or the reaction takes place in situ, which is much, much more difficult. Since if you have a reactor, you can steer the reactor, you can heat or cool the reactor, you can supply oxygen very easily to that kind of reactor. But if that takes place in the soil, everything is much more difficult. So to feed the reactor or the soil, so there should be like a constant feeding of this food, because if it's too much or if it fluctuates too much, that can lead to the conditions that bacteria are running out of the, for example, oxygen. So if you want to increase the feed, then it's better to do it slowly and smoothly and let this biomass to stabilize and selection of the right kind of biomass to do the treatment. And then there are two different kind of reactors. Complete reactors. If you have like a barrel or activated sludge plant in the wastewater treatment plant, and you provide the same conditions to the whole reactor, then it's complete mixed reactor. And on the other hand, plug flow reactor means that you have a plume or compound X, and that amount of the compound X is passing like a block through the reactor. And for example, when we talk about the plume of contaminant, spill of contaminant in soil, it is a plume flow. It's like a patch of or bunch of chemical passing through the soil layers and yeah. And the process is of course slower by that time. And the residence time of the contact of the compound X and biomass needs to be long enough. And there needs to be enough biomass in the reactor or in the soil. And that's called like a food biomass ratio. And by increasing the biomass, you can also feed more problematic compound to the system. And one possibility, particularly in the mixed system reactor, you can increase the efficiency by recycling this active biomass. For example, in the wastewater treatment plant, that is practice, and that's the recycling of this organic biome and active biomass is the like a key component of the activated sludge treatment. And also the hydrologic retention time, the residence time when this compound is in contact with the bacteria, it needs to be long enough. And some compounds are more recalcitrant than other. And I think most of you have been studying the wastewater treatment. Yeah, you are familiar with wastewater treatment by activated biomass. But please consider the system that is in situ. How much more challenging to keep this bacteria happy is that, because you have to try to create suitable conditions in the soil underneath soil layer, underneath perhaps non-permeable layers. Then there is this water phase or groundwater level, and your compound can be either in the vadose zone or in the groundwater zone. And yes, but this kind of processes are done, have been done, and more of this kind of reactors are available. And for example, those groups who selected this chlorinated hydrocarbon, chlorinated phenols in the soil, for example, this kind of treatment has been studied quite a lot in Tampere Technical University, not by me, my fellows, and I have also attached some couple of scientific articles how this kind of process can go on. So I think it's here. One of those, and if you look articles produced, for example, Minna Männistö, she did her doctoral thesis of the in situ degradation of polychlorophenol by the natural bacteria in a groundwater in boreal areas, meaning that in Finland in cold conditions. And this is the address where you can find this article. And this is a very, very informative picture of these processes and partitioning of compounds in the soil. And there are two alternatives. There are compounds which are dense, non-aqueous phase liquid. This means that they don't dissolve to the water very well, and they are heavier than water. And in those kind of conditions, they tend to sink to the bottom of soil and groundwater until they reach impermeable layer, either bedrock or sandy layers. And when it occurs bedrock in Finland, this bedrock is full of fractures, and those fractures are again one alternative for those compounds, nasty compounds, to spread the environment. And then another possibility is that this is lighter than water, non-aqueous phase liquid. So it goes to the soil, through the soil, penetrates, sooner or later reach the groundwater, but it's floating on the surface of the groundwater as a pool. And it's quite easy to collect the pool. In that case, for example, when I told you about this kind of soil vapor extraction wells and techniques, so they try to hit this kind of situation to collect this matter, this chemical, when it is in that kind of very highly concentrated pocket in the environment. But little by little, for example, I know that some of you have selected gasoline, or when gasoline, there are these betex, benzene, toluene, xylene in the gasoline, benzene. Those ingredients from the gasoline are more soluble and very soluble to water, and little by little those compounds are released from this pocket of non-aqueous liquid, and they start to travel with the groundwater depending on how soluble they are. And if they are very soluble, they are not absorbed to the soil matrix, but if they are somehow non-soluble, all this organic matter, all these mineral particles absorb either permanently or impermanently this compound, and this plume is spreading with the groundwater, and the speed of spreading depends on the solubility and the partitioning of the compound X with the organic matter and soil and water. And this is another article which follows this previous picture, and it is it's a review article which deals with the on-site biological remediation of contaminated groundwater. And here you can see all these possible biological mechanisms which occurs. So there might be subsurface microorganisms, there are also microorganisms in the groundwater, and what occurs is this anaerobic biodegradation for those compounds which can be degraded biologically, and then aerobic metabolism to some compounds, and then anaerobic biodegradation for those compounds with that contains chloride, and the degradation the release of chloride from the molecule is the required and the end the re, the end end product end point what we are looking for, since after this release of chloride from this compound, this rest of the molecules, it's quite biodegradable and harmless compound. And if you choose biological technique for your compound in what you have selected, and you are going to work this mechanism of degradation are either aerobic, anaerobic, with mineralization in the very best case, co-metabolism sometimes, and then for some compound it is this reductive dehalogenation when this chlorinated compounds is a source of the energy. Okay. Then I haven't seen in Finland this kind of treatment system that the contaminant slurry, contaminated slurry is, for example, treated in this kind of lagoon, the structure of this process itself is very typical for the treatment of wastewater. And also, I think there are something like that in Porvo Neste refinery, where they treat the wastewaters containing mainly hydrocarbons. So some of the hydrocarbons, the shortest chain hydrocarbon, can be biologically degraded in this kind of reactor. Then comes this biological treatment of contaminants in the soil, but off-site. And this means that this hazardous problematic soil, Pima soil, is excavated, transported to somewhere else, and it's treated somewhere in the landfill, which is specialized for the treatment of hazardous materials. So nowadays, it means that it must have proper impermeable layers, proper collections of the rainwater and liquids treated there. And somehow it's easier to control this water, oxygen, nutrients, when it is in the heap or in the compost. For example, this is the most common method for the soil contaminated with hydrocarbons. Oily sludges, waste oil, or organic matter containing hydrocarbons, but also some other problematic compounds. Okay, I will come back here later on, because I would like to show first this slide, because this is a heap of some contaminated, for example, soil. And as you can see, you can manipulate these conditions in the heap and in the compost quite easily. You can, for example, mixture this soil material, and for example, this kind of turning this compost and heaps, it's something what is done, for example, in the landfill in Jyväskylä, Mustankorkea. They have this kind of heaps, and they just turn them every now and then in order to guarantee that that all this hazardous material is in contact with the bacteria. And at the same time, this moisture and nutrients and oxygen is mixed to the whole heap. Yes, and one of our students, a couple of years ago, she studied, made her master thesis in Mustankorkia in order to use different kind of filling material to enhance this composting process. This because without this kind of supporting material, this hazardous material can become too impermeable. So it needs some kind of solid structure in order to keep its porous with enhance this kind of mass transfer of food, bacteria and oxygen. And I think I have here a picture how it looked like. And if you want to study more of this kind of treatment, please go to this Suvi Simpanen's doctoral thesis that covers this treatment of contaminated soil with this kind of all kind of exotic and normal techniques, as you can see here. Mixing the heap with the drug or injecting the water and nutrients by pipes, but she also introduced a lot of more exotic biostimulants besides of nitrogen and phosphorus in order to enhance the biodegradability, and also some compounds with are somehow surfactants or some kind of detergent in order to release the hazardous compounds from the soil matrix and become more available for the bacteria. So this is quite common and normal, and that kind of heaps occurs all over the Finland, and some landfills are more specialized to this problematic heaps, but this kind of not so contaminated hydrocarbon heaps are also very common in all communities. And then I would like to introduce one that kind of a technique what was studied done 20 years ago, and this is located in Porvoo, Kilpilahti, Neste oil refinery area, where they disposed sludge from the lagoon where they were treating hydrocarbons, and some hydrocarbon degraded, but some just produced the sludge. And then the idea was to put this oily problematic sludge to the normal field, and it was called Öljypelto, oil field. And in the very beginning, it was very actively studied, and there was very high expectations that, okay, it's land farming. Yeah, this kind of inexpensive land farming can solve these problems of a huge amount of hydrocarbon contaminated soils and sludge. So this Anu Mikkonen and some other scientists were following for Yes, the degradation of hydrocarbons in this soil. A lot of hydrocarbon disappeared. The short chain hydrocarbon disappeared, degraded, evaporated. But what happened? What happened was that what happened was that when this when this active processes occurred on the surface of the soil, there was and still is the local farmer is going to the field and turns the topsoil 3 times per year, and this activity and also rainwater have been washing the hydrocarbons deeper into the layer of the soil. So the surface of this oil field is pretty okay. It's okay. But if you have a look deeper on the layer on this oil field, you can see that the contaminants and fractions of the waste oil have accumulated in the deeper layers of the soil. So they are waiting for some more robust treatment, and we have couple of buckets full of this material in our laboratory, and I'm looking for a candidate who would start to handle this material, this bluish, very hard material containing very long chain hydrocarbons with aromatic structure, not biodegradable, very recalcitrant, very hydrophobic stuff. And then we have this another project of the oil contaminated soil that contains much easier stuff. Mostly, mainly diesel from the from the nuuskakuja. So two master thesis topic are waiting for students to start the treatment. For example, by using this kind of innovative, very aggressive oxygen-releasing compounds, that if you mix this kind of compound to the soil, there will be a very dramatical supply and leaching of oxygen, more or less like explosion of oxygen formation in the soil with releases the contaminants from the matrix, and same time provide oxygen for the heterotrophic bacteria, either in the soil or in the groundwater. And this is the mechanism of this compounds which now already tested in Finland, but not quite many cases. But we were in Estonia, and we were trying to provide this kind of oxygen releasing compounds to the soil that contains benzene and Petex compounds by introducing this material to the soil and particularly to the groundwater which was passing from the Pärnu's city center towards the Pärnu River. And it looks like that we had this kind of small package of these reactive materials, which was put into the pipes, and during a couple of years, the water was supposed to pass this somehow like reactive wall of wells with the radius of influence releasing oxygen into the groundwater which was passing this reactive wall, which looked like that in practice. So this is one way to try to treat the plume of contaminants going in the subsurface area, either on the Vadose zone but probably in the groundwater zone. And this goes also very close to the end of my presentation, which deals with making this kind of barriers in order to eliminate or prevent the spreading of the contaminants. Couple of words of one possible treatment techniques of contaminated soil or sediment. For example, stabilization. There are very many techniques, but as I told, this kind of option to leave this hazardous material in the soil is not preferred by many problem owners because this doesn't guarantee a zero risk. So after this solidification stabilization, this compound is still in the soil or in the sediment. But when it comes to the sediment, usually the problem with the sediment is that these hazardous compounds are found in the sediment, and if you go to the lake and dredge or move the sediments, it means that you are mobilizing all those hazardous materials from the bottom of the lake. And in that case, this kind of stabilization of this hazardous matter on the bottom of the lake is very, very positive option, and it is practiced in Finland. For example, this material can be stabilized by mixing of some compounds with it prevent the spreading of that. And at the moment, it seems that what is very hot is the use of the biochar or activated carbon to inject this locally produced, very cost-effective, robust biochars produced by the local actors, local producers, and mixing this activated carbon to the sediments. And the idea of this addition of activated material is to absorb the harmful compounds so they are not released by the rainfall or leachate. And then there are, of course, much more strong compounds We can do that same. Some ash, for example, and also at the moment, this use of the ash with is not containing hazardous metals, for example, is studied in order to stabilize the contaminants in the for example, in the heap, usually by adsorption or absorption or precipitating. If we are talking about salts, that can be precipitation. So they make the solubility product, solubility the constant prevents the spreading of the hazardous compound after that. Or this compound can also detoxify the compound. Besides of this very robust activated carbon biochar, clay, ash, there are also very fancy, expensive materials, nano iron, modified iron and nanoparticles, graphenes, and so on, which have been tested in the laboratory. They are working in the laboratory very nicely, but for the practical purposes, they have been far too exotic, far too expensive yet. okay. About this treatment of the compound by stabilization, I would like to pick this one technique. Some of the group was choosing a contaminant which contained chromium, and chromium is a problematic ingredient in the soil, because on the other hand, human beings need some amount of the chromium 3, but in some condition, in reduced condition, this chromium is as a chromium 6, and that form of chromium is very problematic because it is carcinogenic. And if something is carcinogenic, this means that you have to end up to quite drastic measures to eliminate the carcinogenicity. And one very common way is this kind of chemical reaction in order to, is it oxidize? Yeah, I think to oxidize iron 6 to iron, oh no, chromium 6 to chromium 3, and which precipitates nicely, and also it's not toxic and not, at least not carcinogenic at all. Okay, and I will skip these exotic techniques quite quickly, and emphasize the problem of this problem of the leaving the problematic compound on the site in situ. Even though you have stabilized it at the moment, the conditions might change, and this hazardous compound can be released later on. And if you end up to this kind of stabilization technique, then you have to carry out experiments, leaching experiments, that you have to be sure that your solution is going to hold the problematic compounds in different kind of conditions, and that we used extraction leaching tests where the material is located in the column and the liquid is passing through the material, and the liquid can be either water with different pH, the leachate can contain some solvents, and the temperature might vary, and your stabilized material should be able to maintain and keep this contaminant in the solid form. And then few words about thermal methods. And I think I mentioned that, for example, when this Finnish firefighter rescue college in Kuopio were developing this soil vapor extraction trailer, SAMU, this kind of injection of steam, hot steam to the soil is also used in order to flush out compounds from the soil matrix, but that can be also practiced on site or off site ex situ. And I think that I will be able to put one presentation here in Finland where they use this kind of method in the demonstration scale somewhere in the Finland as a part of this Finnish demonstration program funded by Finnish government in order to introduce and test this innovative but little bit risky techniques in the Finnish conditions in order to find more suitable and less costly problems. And yeah, okay. And one possible still is to try to encapsulate or make this kind of non-permeable or permeable barrier around the contaminated area, either to isolate it totally or prevent the flow of clean water to this contaminated area, or treat the groundwater which is created in this soil. And I think that my example from Estonia was a little bit like this, that forcing the groundwater to pass through this kind of chain of reactive barrier full of oxygen-releasing compounds is something close to this kind of technology. Okay. Okay. I was running through these more exotic techniques at this time, and now, after this, you should be that familiar with all different technologies that you should find alternative technology for the excavation and tomorrow I will help you to find cases, and you can also try to either the Google or go to this ELY center and try to have a look these decisions of ELY centers, and then we will join this your contaminant and then real contaminated case somewhere in Finland, and then you start to act as a scientific lunatic innovator and trying to introduce some of those alternative innovative technology for the remediation of the site. What has been solved by some more traditional technologies? And I saw that you have selected metals, BTEX, hydrocarbons, chlorinated phenols, polyaromatic hydrocarbons. So all of them are very, very common in Finland, and usually they have been solved with very conventional method. And I would like you to try to demonstrate and simulate something else. But that is for tomorrow.